Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. We're glad you've tuned into the program to join us again this week. In our program, we'll be continuing with our discussion on the unveiling of an icon. We'll fill you in a little bit later in the first half hour of our program as to our discussion, certainly one of interest. But first, we'll be sharing with you a Lifeline Health production, and as well, to lead off, we'll have a song selection by Bruce Moss entitled Wisdom of a Fool.
You can feed a lot of people with a million. You can build a lot of houses with a billion or two. Just imagine what could happen with a trillion or more. We could beautify and harmonize the world. Since the time of Cain and Abel, modern man has not been able to reconcile that deed oh so cruel. For what good is wise deduction if it leads to self-destruction? That surely is the wisdom of a fool. It is written in the Bible, all we need for our survival is exactly what we have here on this earth. Instead of reaching for the stars or colonizing Mars, we should be dealing with the problems here on Earth. You can feed a lot of people with a million. You can build a lot of houses with a billion or two. Just imagine what could happen with a trillion or more. We could beautify and harmonize the world. In this land of milk and honey, life means little more than money. To the rich man, money always rules. How can so few have so many and so many have so few? That surely is the wisdom of a fool. You can read it in the paper, you can hear it on the news. How can we treat each other oh so cruel? Professing to be wise, we reject the truth for lies. That surely is the wisdom of a fool. You can feed a lot of people with a million. You can build a lot of houses with a billion or two. Just imagine what could happen with a trillion or more. We could beautify and harmonize the world. You'd better listen, politicians, presidents and kings. What good is all your money or your jewels if you think your wealth will save you when you're dead and in the grave? That surely is the wisdom of a fool. Since the time of Cain and Abel, modern man has not been able to reconcile that deed oh so cruel. For what good is wise deduction if it leads to mass destruction? That surely is the wisdom of a fool. That surely is the wisdom of a fool. That surely is the wisdom of a fool. You can feed a lot of people with a million. You can build a lot of houses with a billion or two. Just imagine what could happen with a trillion or more. We could beautify and harmonize the world. We could beautify and harmonize the world. We could beautify and harmonize the world.
A health issue that concerns all of us at some point in our life is that around a healthy heart. It is something that affects those around us, and I'm sure we are acquainted with somebody who has suffered a heart ailment of some sort. Here on campus, I've got Mario Sarek here in the studio again today. Mario has offered some health outreach series on the campus in which he's had a number of people in attendance from the medical profession to students, and it's a program he's had ongoing over a few terms here on the campus. And our Lifeline production series that I'll be sharing with you in a moment is along the lines of heart health, but specifically to women's heart health. And Mario, welcome to the studio. Maybe you want to share a bit of information with us about your health series and some of the information that ties in specifically to women's heart health.
Yes, well, the health series is about a five-part series that I've been showing ongoing. Looks at some scientific ways and also practical ways to live a abundant and a healthy life, making some small changes in one's life, but having big impacts on the long term, how we live and how we feel and so on. And one of the things that we're going to look today is about women's health. And I think it's interesting when we think about heart attacks, we think men are the more prominent that they get it, but women are, we see more lately, women have been catching up, so to speak, and not only in the diet and lifestyle in general, but also women have a different physique in the sense that I was interested when I was listening to this series, that when a man gets a heart attack, it's easier to revive a major heart attack by CPR, for instance, or a defibrillator, but women have not only to get a heart stops around the area, but also they get in the arteries fibrillation, spasm, and this makes it harder to use a CPR in a more efficient way if it's a major heart attack that women receives than say men.
It's interesting because up until recently, a heart attack was really mostly associated with men. You know, very seldom would you hear women suffering any heart ailments such as a heart attack. But it's certainly becoming more prominent now. I recently listened to a presentation by a German doctor by the name of Hans Diehl, and he made an interesting comment, you know, in relation to the fact that, you know, women are assuming more of a lifestyle that, you know, traditionally men have assumed. And he said, you know, it's kind of a harsh comment in a sense, but he said, if you live like a man, he said, you'll end up dying like a man. And when you look at the heart health, it's interesting because now we see women who play a larger role in the workplace, have a lot more, you know, have the time constraints that men traditionally have had. And now we see women suffering similar, you know, heart ailments that men had traditionally suffered from.
But not only that, we can see that even early ages, we start seeing these deterioration of the walls of our arteries. And the medical profession is getting alarmed. We heard about diabetes and other things, but we start seeing at younger age these problems as well. And I think, you know, the prevention is the number one rule here for young people as well, to start early on to actually eat healthy, and because it will certainly have benefits when they get older.
Yeah, and it's alarming to see at the young age that they're picking up that deterioration within the arteries, you know, even in the teenage years. So here's our Lifeline Productions for today.
Did you know that heart disease is the number one killer of women? This is Dr. Becky Wong for Lifelines. Surprisingly true, according to the American Heart Association, many women do not realize their own risk factors for heart disease. A woman's risk of heart disease starts to increase between age 40 to 60. However, heart disease develops gradually, beginning as early as the teenage years. Think about that. Here are some risk factors that you can control. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, smoking, obesity, and physical activity. You can lower your risk of heart disease with lifestyle choices. So take that vital first step and choose wisely. Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
On last week's program, we had a look at the sanctuary, and that is more specifically the tabernacle that is located within the sanctuary. And the reason being is over the last week and the upcoming 2 weeks, we'll be having a look at an article that we came across, which was entitled Unveiling an Icon, or which we call Unveiling an Idol. It was a replica, which was recently constructed, of the tabernacle, which was located within the sanctuary found in the Old Testament and the New Testament, a replica of the tabernacle that was constructed from the actual tabernacle in the heavenly sanctuary. But this one was designed with a twist. It was a tabernacle that was designed very close to the specifications within the Bible. But the only twist to it was it had an idol or an icon of Mary within the ark of the within the tabernacle on top of the mercy seat. So we got Mary in the studio, and we want to have a look at this to see what's true and what the implications are of this. But first, I'd like to share an amazing fact. James Cook, that's Captain James Cook, sailed around the world and managed to survive 1,000 perils. But when he landed on the island paradise of Hawaii, the primitive natives took him for a god. He allowed the Hawaiians to view him as divine and worship him. When on his return voyage they found out he was not a god, they killed and mutilated the renowned captain. Interesting, Mario, to see how somebody is viewed as a god and what happened to him when they found out that he wasn't a god. Now, we know, Mario, that over time, you know, even within recorded scriptures, that people have been regarded as a god.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, several things you can find from the Bible, too, talks about various individuals who thought themselves being gods. Many of the pagan worship styles, even today, you'll find that someone takes on the eminence of being God on earth. Mm-hmm. You know, in that way, thinking or saying that they are God, actually.
Yeah. And there's a couple instances, too, in the Bible where the prophets, the angels appeared to the prophets, and the prophets bowed before them. Mm-hmm. And the angels said, no, you know, don't reverence us. We're only, you know, mm-hmm. servants like you are. Don't bow before us. You know, it's only before God that we are to bow.
Yeah.
And there's, I think there's a couple other instances there that you looked up in the scriptures. Maybe you want to share one with us there, Mary.
Well, I think it's, you know, I always say the best thing is to go see what Jesus experienced when he was on earth in terms of temptations. And that takes us back to Matthew 4. That's where Jesus uses the scripture to confront Satan, in his disguise as an angel of light as he comes to him and says, you know, I will correct you on these things that you are here on this mission. And one of the things that brought out the third temptation there, Paul, is that he said he takes him on a high mountain and he shows him all this world and he says, if thou be the Son of God, would you bow down to me and worship me and I'll give you all this.
Yeah.
And again, he's being a created angel being here asking Jesus, God himself, to worship him. And we found that very strong in Isaiah 14, all that describing his desire to be as the Most High, to be actually as God.
Yeah, interesting that that's always been Satan's desire to be worshipped as God.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an instance there with regards to Paul as well in the New Testament. Maybe you want to share that one with us.
Well, it's interesting with Paul. Saul was persecuting God's people, and then God spoke to him on the road to Damascus and changed his life 180 degrees, and he became the apostle to the Gentiles. And so when he went all through various parts of Asia and he preached the gospel, one thing that he found, there was that people are setting up idols. And you'll find many of his in Acts from the time that Paul and Barnabas comes to Lystra, they found that they do some miracles there, and people start attributing them being gods from heaven. And they rent their clothes and say, what are you doing? You know, we are just fellowship men. Mm-hmm. We're just created beings, and, you know, we should give reverence to God, the living God. and not to things. That was one thing, where they're trying to attribute them as being gods and give homage to man mm-hmm. or men. The other parts later on, you'll find when they come to Ephesus. And the city there, actually, interesting, they have made their livelihood on worshipping a goddess called Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting, you read that in Acts 19. In 26, it says, "Moreover, ye see and hear that not alone at Ephesus, but almost throughout all Asia, this Paul had persuaded and turned away much people, saying that they be no gods which are made with hands." And he says, so that not only this our craft is in danger to be set at naught, but also that the temple of the great goddess Diana should be despised and her magnificence should be destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worships. Wow.
Yeah. Interesting. They have this idol that they worship as a god, and it was, they said there, the whole world worships, you know,
mm-hmm.
the whole area around them was worshiping this idol. And the reason why we bring this subject up, maybe there's something else you want to share.
Well, yeah, I just thought, you know, I like to take something from you, something from the Old Testament, just to show you that through the Old Testament, God was very specific that He's chosen people at the time, Israel, were not to have any association with the nations around them because they were heavily into pagan worship, worshiping things of created of hands and so on. And in Micah 5:13, it says, "Thy graven images also will I cut off, and thy standing images out of the midst of thee, and thou shalt no more worship the work of thy hands." So they had actually fallen apostasy in Israel, and they actually adopted some of the cultures and rituals around the nations. And God says, "No, I want you to be separate. I want you to be a holy people. I want you to be a people that proclaim me as a living God and not these dead gods that other people are worshiping."
So the Bible's clear on two things.
Mm.
We're not to worship a person as a god, and we're not to worship an idol as a god.
Yeah, nor are we worship angels.
Right.
It says here,
yeah.
too. We have
yeah.
seen many places. Because
an angel is a created being.
Exactly.
So, you know, angels, humans, or idols are not to be worshipped mm-hmm. as gods. And the reason why I would make this point is when we look at this newer version of the Ark of the Covenant that has been recently crafted. And if people need a copy of, you know, let's see a copy of the picture, I mean, you can always email us. We'll give you our email address at the end of the program. We'll give you a picture of the actual true Ark of the Covenant and this picture of the new Ark of the Covenant. And the reason why I raise this issue of worshiping people as a god is on this new Ark of the Covenant, we see this image of Mary. And just to recap about what we spoke about last week we were looking at the true Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant, and on top of the Ark of the Covenant was a mercy seat, and above the mercy seat was the what was referred to as the Shekinah glory, is where God dwelt. And on this new Ark of the Covenant, this new version, they have implemented Mary where God actually sits on the mercy seat.
Also, Paul, if you look at the picture there, and as I said, as you said, we will send us to those who would like to have it, is that the angels, in the original, they were covering over the Ark of the Seat, looking down on the mercy seat to see the plan of salvation, actually. But in this here, actually, the angels on the side, bowing down to Mary and giving her homage.
Mm-hmm. So, in actual fact, like you say, in the real Ark of the Covenant, the angels looked down upon the mercy seat
mm-hmm.
because they marvel at the plan of salvation.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at that mercy seat, and within the mercy seat, you know, they could see how the plan of salvation was being worked out. With this new one, they're not so much looking at the mercy seat, but they're bowing down and paying homage to Mary.
Mm.
And it's clear that this Ark of the Covenant has implemented Mary as God.
Yes. And also interesting too is that the Ten Commandments was placed inside the Ark in the original two
mm-hmm.
tablets of stone, as we read in the Deuteronomy and Exodus. But we can have a look at that and see what's the Ten Commandments. The two tablets that are found here are very interesting, Paul, in terms of the numbering that we can see as well.
Yeah.
They're different.
Yeah. And just before we get to the Ten mm-hmm. Commandments, there's something else as well I want to point out on the Ark that I'd like to discuss first. And that's the fact that Mary on the front part there has a sun disk, a solar disk, basically,
mm-hmm.
With the rays of the sun emanating from it. And at her waist level is a crescent moon. And the crescent moon with the sun disk located above it has been in existence for a long time, that symbology. It's in idol worship, it's in Baal worship. It represents, the male, the female, it's a fertility symbol. And it's not found within scriptural references for sure.
No, and it's interesting too that it was very prominent in the very different religions you go around the world. Mm-hmm. This type of worship is found with different names, but it's still the same a worship, pagan worship.
It's interesting how they take the pagan symbols and have implemented on the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, something that comes to mind is Ezekiel 22:26. It says, "Her priests have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. They have put no difference between the holy and profane, neither have they showed difference between the clean and the unclean." And it says, "I also have their eyes, they have hid their eyes from my Sabbath, and I am profaned among them." Very strong words here, that they actually had violated God's law. And when we think of God's law, it brings us back to Exodus 20.
Mm-hmm.
Up to giving. But the law was before that, actually. Some people think it was at the Mount of Sinai, but we know that before that, we read in Genesis, Abraham and other kept the law of God, and it was written in their hearts, and it was verbally spoken. But later on, after 400 years of wilderness and being captive in Egypt, that God needed to put it in stone so they wouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the Ten Commandments are one of the very few things that we see written with the finger of God. It wasn't given to man to write or to record. It was actually written by the finger of God.
And two things, though. It was written to God, but also the sanctuary itself, as we looked at last week, was very specifically given to Moses by God to the minute detail. Mm-hmm. And God over and over says, make it according to this pattern that I give to you.
Yeah. God always pays attention to detail.
He does, yes.
We want to shun that at times, but God does pay attention to detail. It's interesting too when you look at the Ten Commandments that are found not necessarily within this version of the Ark of the Covenant, because it's sort of superimposed on the cover and on the front of it, so you can see that. And it's interesting how it's broken down. It shows the two tablets of stone engraved on there, and it shows three commandments on the left table and seven on the right table. We don't often see it broken down like that. Sometimes you see four and six. Sometimes you actually do see five and five. And people will often say, well, the ones listed on the first tablet are commandments that relate to God's relationship with man. And the second table is the commandments that relate between man and mankind. But here we see a breakdown of three and seven, which is different.
Well, Paul, it's interesting again, because if you take the first one, 1 to 3, with reference to relationship to God, then we look at the true and original one that is given in Exodus, you'll find that there's 4 relating to our relationship to God, and 6 our relationship to our fellow man. And I'll read the second one that says this: "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven images, or any likeness of anything that's in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is under water underneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto 1,000 of them that love me and keep my commandments." So God very specific in the giving to Moses. The second commandment here, there's no idol worship, to be at all.
Yeah. So really, in order to break the Ten Commandments down into 3 and 7, to give you the 10, something had to come into play. The second commandment was removed.
Yes.
Which meant there was only 3 instead of 4 commandments that related to God. But so that they could keep 10, the actual 10th commandment was split into 2, which became 9 and 10. So it's interesting. They wipe out the second commandment, which basically says, the summarization that, there's to be no idol worship. Well, obviously they had to get rid of that one if they're going to implement an idol on top of this image of Mary, on top of the Ark of the Covenant, on top of the mercy seat. So it's interesting how you work around that one. But then what happens to the, if there was four before, the fourth commandment was the Sabbath command,
yes.
Which, the only one that says remember, that becomes number three.
Yes, yes. And then the fourth one is really the one in Exodus that shows us who is the lawgiver. Because all the other one points of a deity, but it could be applied to any of the pagan gods. But the fourth one is that brings out that God is the one who created all the things, and he rested, and he instituted the Sabbath day for us to be hallowed and for us to be worshipped, to worship him on his day and not our day. And he goes through that. It's the longest one, actually. The fourth one is the longest, one of the longer ones, that God specifies what's supposed to be done and so on the day. So again, in the centrality of the Ten Commandments stands out the Sabbath, pointing us back to the week of creation, pointing us back to the God of the living God of the Creator himself.
Yeah, and again, when we see this breakdown of only three commandments applying to the relationship between God and man, not only is the fourth commandment becomes a third, but quite often that third commandment is used unjustly to say, well, the Sabbath is now Sunday, which, is man's devising and not God's.
Yeah.
So here we see two big changes, really, within the commandments and within the first four. Number two is wiped out, which says there's to be no idol worship. The fourth then becomes the third, which is used to endorse, Sunday sacredness as opposed to true Sabbath, seventh day of rest, which is implemented or instituted in the Bible from the beginning of time, prior to the beginning of time. And, the Bible's clear in Isaiah that, the Sabbath will be, the day of rest for eternity.
Yeah, and just a quick thing that comes to my mind, Paul, is King Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel chapter 3, if listeners want to read the whole chapter. There's an image made of gold. King Nebuchadnezzar required all people from around the nations and tribes and language to come and show him homage by worshiping this idol that he had made of whole gold. And they were supposed to bow down to all kinds of music and so on. We see that the three young Hebrews stands up and they were not bowing down. They're brought forth to him and he says, well, I'll give you a second chance. Maybe you didn't hear what my decree was, that you have to bow down or you're going to be thrown into a fire furnace. And they say, there's two things that say, we will not worship your gods, nor will we, serve your image, to bow down to your image. And if our God is able, he will deliver us. And because King never said at that time, said, who is this of your God that will be able to deliver you at this situation?
And the last thing I'd like to bring in, Mero, is the idea of blasphemy. John 10:33 says, for a good work we stone thee not, but for blasphemy, and because thou, being a man, makest thyself God. And here on this tabernacle, we see this image of Mary located where God dwelt. So we see the implementation of Mary for God. Mm. So it's interesting to see the connotations that exist on this new Ark of the Covenant. But we've pretty well come to the end of our time. If anybody has any comments or questions or would like to see a picture of what we're actually discussing, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. In next week's program, we invite you to tune in again. We will be further discussing this topic. And we want to look at this idea of deity and as well, is Mary alive now? Like, if Mary is going to be worshipped as God, is she alive now? What role does she play, if any? And really, the best place that we can go for an answer to that is in the scriptures. And Mary made an interesting comment in John chapter 2, verse 5. And it took place at the wedding feast in Canaan, in which Mary said, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. So to find out the answer to this question about Mary, does she exist now? Is she alive? What role does she play, if any? Well, if she said that Jesus is the truth, then we ought to look to the scriptures next week for the truth. And this brings to an end our program for today. We hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.